Horror movies are more than just empty thrills. They are a mirror that reflects the darker sides of our culture and our psyche. Each episode, we will go beyond the first cut and discuss the themes and topics that hide below the surface.
I'm Dave, Professor of Communication.
And I'm Vince, Professor of Psychology. Welcome to A Dark Impression.
Today, we're going to discuss the films Alien and Event Horizon. Alien from 1979 is the original modern space horror. Directed by Ridley Scott, Alien stars Sigourney Weaver, John Hurt, Tom Skerritt, Harry Dean Stanton, and, of course, Jones the Cat. Event Horizon was made in 1997, stars Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill, amongst others, and was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. There is no cat in Event Horizon, unfortunately. Jones was preoccupied at that point. In both of the films, you're seeing fairly prolific directors in the earlier stages of their craft. While Anderson would go on to mainly stick to the violent horror genre, Scott would branch off and explore the medium through many different genres and types of films. Sticking to horror for now, these films would fall into the space horror genre, but they have their own unique takes on how to create horror in the darkest corners of the universe. Today, we'll discuss creating horror through isolation, the unseen and the parasitic natures of these threats, and how set design helps to create a sense of tension throughout both films. We'll explore some other things along the way, such as how Jones is the real hero of Alien. Welcome to A Dark Impression, and don't forget, in space, no one can hear you scream. Vince, why can't people hear you scream in space? I think this is the question that most audience members will have at this point. Why? No one knows. I think science can't explain it.
Not enough people have been there to really know. So
it's just one of those things. How often is there footage of like Neil Armstrong like screaming in space?
I mean, we heard him say one small step, so evidently we can hear stuff.
Yeah, no, I think that it's a big plot hole in Alien.
Yep.
And for that reason, you know, I'm out.
That was such a good movie, though.
Yeah, it is. It is great. It's one of those movies that I forget about because I go 10 years between seeing it or whatever, and then I watch it and I'm like, right, it's so good. Like, it's just like, it's a good story. It's not overly long. It's, you know, Ridley Scott isn't afraid to kill off characters, which is nice. in inventive ways. So it's really just a cool movie.
Yeah. And in so many sci-fi movies or movies in space have been more action-based. It was interesting to see a movie where it's not the action that's dominating, it's the tension.
Yeah. It's a quiet movie.
It is. It's quiet. It's dark. There are scenes where there's very little lighting, but you don't need the explosions and everything to... It's a masterclass in tension. You're glued to your screen because you know something is going to happen. But not just yet. And he kind of stretches the sauce until it's like perfect. So, yeah.
I think that's a really good point. And Event Horizon, I think, for me, differs very much from that, where you don't always know what's going to happen, but there's always stuff happening.
Yes. I don't know if the screenwriters actually knew what was going to happen, but yes, there are things happening.
It kind of feels like that points in it. The horror is being kind of crammed down your throat.
Yes.
Not that I didn't enjoy the film. You know, I think I really enjoyed it when it came out. I remember seeing it, getting it on like VHS and being like, this is amazing.
Oh, I saw it in the movies.
You're a few years older than me. I was nine. So I think Event Horizon for a 9-year old Dave would have been a little much, but I probably saw it when I was about 10 or so, which is probably also not the most appropriate movie. But yeah, I feel like I was excited to watch it again because I don't think I'd watched it since maybe college.
Right.
So it's been a solid 20 years since I watched it or something.
Okay,
I don't think I would go watch it again.
Right.
I think that was enough for me for another 20 years. Whereas Alien, like, I could revisit it a lot more frequently.
All right. So from the movie-making perspective, if you had to compare the two, what would be like a strong point for each and kind of a for each as well.
Okay, so
curveball.
That's a tough one for Alien.
Okay.
Because I think in many ways it's about as close to a perfect horror film as you can get
for what
it does.
Is Alien better than Jaws?
I think it is because the at least in terms of plot pacing, because the last act of Jaws is a little bit slow. Alien, the whole thing is slow.
Right.
But that's part of it. That's part of the horror is how slow it is. And then it's like kind of slowly builds steam throughout. So by the end, everything kind of crashes together and it's awesome.
Okay.
I still think Jaws is a better piece of cinema than Alien, but Alien's, I think, a better movie than Jaws, if that makes sense.
Wow.
The distinction between the two, but very, yes, very close. You know, in terms of what Alien can improve upon, I don't know. I'm thinking to myself, like, maybe the opening, but I really like the opening.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think it's a glorious film.
Yeah.
Event Horizon, on the other hand, like, I'm having trouble thinking of what I would say was good about it.
The casting.
Sam Neill, yeah. So that's Sam Neill's wonderful. Lawrence Fishburne's wonderful.
Yes.
I always like Jason Isaacs and stuff.
Yep. I thought the casting was one of the better elements in that movie.
Yeah. Sam Neill as Dr. Weir is just he's always a good choice for characters that go slowly or very quickly, in the case of this film, insane. And Lawrence Fishburne, pre-Matrix Lawrence Fishburne, did a really great job.
Yeah.
This is like the stage in his career when he was Lawrence Fishburne. He wasn't still Larry Fishburne, but he wasn't. It was pre-Matrix Lawrence Fishburne.
Right.
So there was a couple of years in there where he was refining his acting chops.
I think he was not Morpheus, so everything that he did was not necessarily compared to that. And he didn't overdo it. He didn't overplay it. I thought his acting was kind of on the mark.
He tried to
make it too dramatic a character or whatever. Yes, it's a horror movie.
He's good.
In space.
Yeah. He's good. In terms of what could be better, I think...
Can I add one thing about what I really liked about
Event Horizon? Yes, please.
The set designs for the spaceship, especially this kind of rotating black hole creating machine, that felt appropriately weird.
Yeah. So I guess going into set design then, since you brought it up, I really liked the way that the set design in Event Horizon drew from Alien.
Mm-hmm.
So like that, like H.R. Geiger, like everything's like hoses and black and gray and everything's like damp.
Yep.
You just get that vibe. I mean, Alien is like perfected it with everything, but you still get that vibe in Event Horizon. It's very clearly inspired by Alien.
The biomechanical
and the visuals there.
Aspects.
Yeah, going back, I like the idea of them going to hell.
Right.
The ship went, it skipped over to hell for a little bit. And then
spoilers.
Spoilers abound. The set design is just it works incredibly well for both films.
Mm-hmm. And that's I think some horror movies don't necessarily put as much focus on. It's like the sets, the context, the tiny little spatial cues can do so much to induce anxiety and fear. And those are not necessarily always processed consciously. Like you're going to notice consciously the threat that's right in your face, but you're not necessarily going to notice consciously all those tiny little cues about space that looks a little strange, angles that look a little weird. You're not going to notice those consciously, but they contribute a lot to that pervasive sense of anxiety in some scenes. And I think those two movies compared to... And I think that's part of what the genre has to offer is if you're going to be in space, there's going to be a special set. It's not going to be your like backyard forest or whatever. So there's a lot of craft that goes into that that really enhances the experience, as opposed to slasher movies where, like watching the first Halloween, one suburban house is pretty much the next suburban house. You can play with the lighting, you can play with some of the angles of the shot, you can play with where your threat comes from, but mm-hmm. a house is a house is a house. Now a spaceship, right. Now you get to really play around with some of the sets. You can hide your threat in the case of Alien. You can hide the threat in dark pipes. And there's so much more that you can do with the set. And I think both movies on that, that was one of the strong points. The floating stuff, the CGI floating stuff in Event Horizon, that kind of ruined a little bit.
Yeah, oh, didn't age yeah. well.
Yeah.
I think I was thinking about this, and this is why I wanted to talk about the set design, because the ships are characters.
Yeah.
And so they have to have their own personality. They have to have their own feeling of mm-hmm. being in the ship and being outside of the ship, mm-hmm. looking at the ship. You know, in the case of Event Horizon, the ship is literally a character. Mm-hmm. In the case of Alien, it's, you know, not as literal, but the ambiance for the film, the horror created is because of the ship. Mm-hmm. If they had a nice, really like that brand new white interior, everything's lit well, Star Trek ship or something like that.
See the little pine cone things right. just smell good in the car. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't be scary.
Right.
You'd look and be like, oh, the alien's there. It's black and dripping and our ship is clean and white. So you really need something that's made by humans in this mm-hmm. case that compares to the alien.
Right.
And, you know, in the case of Event Horizon, the interior of the ship very much mimics the, I guess, like interior monologue of the ship, the ship's thought process. I don't know.
Yeah. I really like the fact that the technology is isolated from the deck by this really long, creepy hallway. That eventually
that's yeah. perfect to blow up.
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, it's again. Dude, spoilers.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've only had like almost what 30 years to watch it. So
that's somewhat fair. Yeah. Okay. So that's a good, I think, evaluation of both movies. Aliens clearly is the better movie of the two objectively. It's hard not to have a great movie when your set design and creature design is based on the art of H.R. Giger. Absolute mad genius. Love the guy's art, the biomechanics, his Necronomicon, just absolutely insane. Event Horizon, I mean, the legendary director's cut would have been nice to see, but allegedly yeah. too scary and disappeared in the sands of the cutting room floor.
Cutting room floor.
Yes. Dang it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a. It would have been nice, like, to see that compared to theatrical cut, because I have a feeling that a lot of the issues that I have with the plot would have been worked out with an additional, what is it, extra like 20 minutes or 30 right. minutes or something like that.
Right.
And I think that it really needed at least a little bit more. Because there were some times where they took really big jumps with telling the story. And mm-hmm. like, at least for me, I was like, you know, you're blowing up this big tube. The other spaceship's attached to it. Are they not going to die? Or, you know, things like that. So.
Oh, you and your critical thinking.
I know. As I get older, I guess, like 10-year-old Dave or however old I was when I saw it for the first time, wasn't so concerned about that. I was just like. His eyes.
Oh, the plucking of the eyes. Such a...
So what,
that was good.
Yeah. What one thing the films have in common is the use of isolation to create tension and horror. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was wondering from your perspective, like psychology-wise and things like that, why are we humans, it seems like, hardwired to be afraid of being alone or isolated.
Okay. A little walk down. I mean, as a species, Homo sapiens is bereft of most attributes that make other animals successful. we're not strong, we don't have big claws or whatever. So if you look at evolutionary psychology, I think one argument that's made is we're good because we can band together effectively, and more so than other species, we can band as larger groups that can actually work together pretty well. We've developed some skills for that, more so than like other primates and whatnot. So isolation is probably one of the worst things that can happen to a human. And that's nothing new. If I'm not mistaken, like the ninth circle of hell, where the devil is a circle of isolation. It's completely frozen and you're far away from everything warm and cuddly and fuzzy. So yeah, isolation is bad. We don't do well on our own. You look at, actually, the Surgeon General in the US came out recently saying that we have a loneliness epidemic. Like, this is, humans need contact, need interaction with others. Space is the ultimate isolator because you're not on the planet anymore. You're not close to anything remotely reminding you of where you are. I mean, you can try to paint a volleyball and interact with it, but in space, it'll deflate and it'll be sad. So all that to say that we're hardwired to establish relationships. If you set a movie in a place where you have a few people around you, but once those people are gone, then you're really, really, really alone. Like, you're the only, not the only member of your species, but you're the only living thing around for thousands of kilometers. Then that prospect is scary. Like, once everything else is gone, there's no other life, not even bacteria, probably. So, wow.
Yeah. To add to that, one of the things that we've talked about on probably just every episode of this is the fight or flight response. And I think that, you know, being on a spaceship.
Yeah. Where do you flee?
Your fight or flight response is now fight. And so if that's not in the cards, like, you know, if there's a whatever 8 foot tall alien looking at you with multiple mouths, then and you want to run, like, you can't go too far.
That's the thing that's really cool about the threat that both movies use. Alien really uses that kind of apex predator. And I guess there's an argument in Alien versus Predator, who's the actual apex. Let's leave that for another episode. For now, compared to human beings, the xenomorph is clearly the superior predator. So unless your name is Ripley and you're a giant of a woman. Wow, Ripley. But like, you can run, you can try to run, but the probability of survival is kind of slim. And then in Event Horizon, it's not anything real that's pursuing you. It's essentially the ship using your memories and twisting your worst memories to torture you. So there is no fleeing from that. And unless you are Lawrence Fishburne's character who can fight against kind of those bad memories, then you're done. There's no fight left.
Yeah. I like that about his character in there, that to beat the ship, you have to be incredibly mentally resilient. Mm-hmm. And even then, he still gets broken.
Right. Something gets broken. Yeah.
And so I think that you get that battle and you see him, and he does a really good job of portraying that internal struggle.
Right.
Externally, so we can see him struggling. Mm-hmm. But the weaker characters succumb much more quickly. Not necessarily physically weaker, but mentally weaker.
Right. They break down more easily. Right. And that goes to the parasitic nature of both threats. And I think we all have maybe we don't all have, but I think it's a common fear now, the fear of parasites, because what's worse than a parasite? It's an entity that lodges inside you that uses you as a resource to grow itself. And once it's done, it just exits with any and no care for its host. And in both movies, you have the traumatic memories in Event Horizon that are the parasite that really just drain you until it breaks you. And in Alien, of course, you have the facehugger that impregnates people to develop the xenomorph. But in both cases, it is a parasitic attack, which is interesting because it's not something that you see that often. I mean, it's not something that you see in the slasher genre. It's not something that you'd see in the zombie genre. It's not something that you would see in the haunting genre. Possession a little bit, but it's, yeah, I guess possession would be the closest to it, but it's not necessarily the most popular type of horror, the parasite type of horror.
Yeah, yeah. No, I would agree with you. I mean, thinking back to the films that we've discussed, you get, well, two of the John Carpenter films are parasite films, Prince of Darkness. So, yeah, so you get these. I think some directors are interested in exploring that theme more, like what it means to be both running from something or trying to avoid something, but also carrying it with you. Mm-hmm. And that tends to bring, not always, but it can bring more drama into the horror genre. And I think that that's not something all horror directors are good at, is the, because like you need that, that like, you know, man versus self. Now it's like, well, I have this thing inside of me and get it out before, you know, something happens. And, you know, I think that that can be really tough to portray, especially when most horror is that external threat. And a lot of times those directors or filmmakers focus a lot more on external threat versus like a group of characters.
Yep.
And it tends to be, I don't want to say easier to write, but it tends to be more comfortable. I think for some filmmakers. Yeah, so you get like a few filmmakers, like Ridley Scott. I mean, I'm pretty sure Ridley Scott can do whatever Ridley Scott wants to do and make a good film.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody like Paul W.S. Anderson, who has a much smaller breadth of his filmmaking genre experience, I guess, for lack of a better term. You know, I think it's neat that he's focusing on that. And then you'll see it come again in his later work, particularly in some of the Resident Evil stuff.
Okay.
Where there are parasitic entities.
True.
You know, Mila Jovovich's character is like whatever, genetically enhanced or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's definitely that crossover. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think as much as you see in Event Horizon.
I think that hits an interesting point, is how much you can use drama in a scare movie to build tension. I'm just remembering the scene in, was there their cafeteria or dining room in Alien, and that's the scene where the character played by John Hurt first starts to feel the impact of the facehugger. And you start with a scene where the atmosphere is relaxed and they're laughing and they're all together, but there's still kind of, you're not watching that scene. There's some metacognition happening. Like, you know, that's not the end of the movie. They shouldn't be happy. So something bad is about to happen and you know it. And slowly but surely he descends into, with something as innocuous as John Hurt just starting to cough, and you have that nice little progression. It's not a jump scare. It's not a, but it's so effective in, because you start with one emotion and gradually switch to a very different emotion instead of trying to make everything so dark and gritty and scary and jumpy. He plays with the full range of emotions, which I think is even more effective to build a horrendous reveal of the tiny xenomorph than if he had done that in a scene where it's just, it starts already anxiety inducing and tries to build up on that.
Yeah, and I think two things. One quick one: whenever a character coughs in a movie, they're gonna die. That's a fact. In any case, yeah, it's. I think it's a very, like, we're looking at modern horror films. It's very much a modern sensibility, like bringing in a lot of drama into horror. Not to say that it didn't exist before now. It certainly did. Obviously, we're talking about it. But it, you know, if you look at 80s horror, if you look at 90s horror, you get some that are dramatic films. But, like, I think the really pivotal ones are oftentimes, like Halloween, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. They're much more straightforward, like those kind of slasher films. The 90s, you start to get psychological horror, which tends to be much more drama-focused. You get, like, Seven, David Fincher. But they tend to be by these good directors who know filmmaking. In the 2000s, we're starting to lose it again. And now we're kind of back into it after, like, Jordan Peele's Get Out, I think, was a big turning point for, you know, really dramatic films that have horror elements. It sort of comes in waves. Ari Aster.
Yeah, I was going to say with the work of Ari Aster, that really brings the drama forward. It's interesting that, that it would ebb and flow, that you'll go from more drama-inspired, like the 70s Exorcist, The Omen, and so on, where there's a lot more drama, to the more recreational, lighter fun of the slasher movies of the 80s. And then back to, it's interesting. Yeah. Every decade seems to be,
It goes in, I think horror in general goes in about 10-year bursts, give or take a few years on either side. And it, like, I do a class, and I don't remember if I even mentioned it on this podcast before, but I do a class on horror film, and I break it down by decade, by themes by decade. And you can pretty close to say, like, okay, end of the decade, that theme's done, and we're going to look at a different theme now. Some split in the middle, but it really depends on, like, major cultural turning points, like World War II being over, for example, things like that. But audiences get burned out on the same thing. If you couldn't tell by people now tuning out to Marvel things and things, you know, stuff like that. Whereas before it was just like, you know, these massive, everybody was going to see the new movie. Now it's like, nah. So not always, but I think that in terms of, like, you know, pacing and plot and horror films fall into this, you know, you have these really dense, heavy films and audiences like them. And then they're like, nah, I just want something that I can go and watch people get, like, chopped up. And so if you're thinking up to the 90s, it's a really good place because it's a clear line. You get the pre-90s psychological horror film. So the 80s into the 90s, you're getting slasher films. You're getting, like, you know, camp. It's fun. It's, you can laugh at it. You can, you know, throw your popcorn at the screen. But at the end of the day, like, it's more fun and scary than anything else. Into the 90s, you're starting to get into the psychological, or, like, you know, David Fincher, filmmakers who care about film as an art and are trying to elevate horror film to something that it wasn't previously, or at least in the 80s necessarily. You know, going back to maybe the 60s and the 70s, where, like, The Exorcist, like, something that's dense. And then the response to that is going to be Blair Witch Project and all of the found footage films that come starting around 2000.
Okay.
That really low budget, you're focusing on the horror. There's some drama in there, but it's really not the main point. The main point is the entity.
Scare your audience.
Things like, you get things like Hostel that, you know, there's drama, but really, you know, people aren't going to see Hostel for the drama. They're going to see it for the gore.
Same for Saw.
For Saw as well. So it's all about, like, the, how can you one up the previous film? And then that ends with, I think, like, Human Centipede, maybe. And then people are like, that's enough. We've done it. Let's move on to, like, you know, some more adult horror films. So, but I think if you look back, like, you'll see these, you know, ebbs and flows, and you can look at, if you notice them, you can start to think about big horror films that came about, like, in the middle between, like, okay, like, this is a pivotal moment and that's a pivotal moment. What's, like, the halfway mark? And usually you'll find that there's a like one film that's like, oh, okay, that was really big, like Blair Witch Project.
Right.
Where, you know, you could look at that and be like, that completely changed audience perception of horror.
Which came first, Blair Witch or Scream?
Scream.
So I would say that Scream was a precursor to the big thing of Blair Witch. Because Scream was taking the intellectual part and bringing it back down to just a fun slasher movie. It was a hybrid.
Yeah. So, like, I guess I don't want to say that everything falls neatly into these buckets.
Well, come and on. I think I was Scream is a perfectly.
I know.
An airtight theory.
I think Scream's a nice outlier there because on the surface you can watch it and it's a slasher movie.
Yep.
Or you can watch it and it's a critique on slasher movies.
It's a perfect bridge between the two.
Yeah. It works equally well, and it's so perfectly 90s, like that sort of tongue-in-cheek humor.
Right.
That you didn't get in the 80s,
right,
and or the 2000s. But yeah, no, I think Scream kind of exists on its own little
planet.
Plane. Yeah. It exists in the inner reaches of hell, much like the Event Horizon.
It's interesting that both of our movies, horror and space, of course, you can't do that really in the past, but in a lot of movies, the time setting is either now or before. We like to project ourselves back in the past, the Gothic element or the Victorian elements, and that aesthetic as creepier. And we see the modern day as either creepy because serial killers, but we generally don't associate, like, there's the full genre of sci-fi projects us into the future. But those two are interesting examples of not a fun or not a dystopian Blade Runner or Black Mirror type of projection in the future, but it's a straight, like, scary projection of ourselves in the future. I thought that was an interesting aspect. That we tend to think of the future as something that's going to be better. There's an interesting dystopian genre of the future is going to be worse, but we don't typically think of the future is going to be viscerally scary. And there you have either like a brand new species that is just designed to hunt and kill, or like science has pushed us beyond what we should as humans know. So that cosmic horror aspect is really interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there are that many movies that have tapped into that combination of sci-fi and cosmic horror that have done it not well enough, but I think intentionally enough, like it's done in that those two movies.
That's a really great point. I would agree with you. I think that there's a lot of space for that type of film.
Yeah.
Get it?
Yeah.
Space.
That's good.
Yeah, thank you.
I also like the xenomorphs. Just having a creature that is just a mouth, no face, no facial expression, nothing to read. It looks just enough like a human because it's mostly bipedal, but otherwise just looks, you can't read anything off of it, is just glorious. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome creature design.
Mm-hmm.
Really, you know, unsettling. It still works today. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look dated. I think you have, how many movies were there? Three, right?
Yeah, there's
four.
Yeah, there's four. Because
then there was the one where...
Yeah.
Yeah, so there was what? There was Ridley Scott, James Cameron. One way or another, I want to see Sigourney Weaver back. And okay. I want to get like a modern horror director in to look at like, what does Alien look like now where she's, you know, like older and she's retired from space, whatever she does.
Okay.
Farming.
Here's my question to you. And you have to pick one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
The new Alien movie directed by A, Ari Aster, B, Jordan Peele. Pick.
Ari Aster.
Okay.
Because I don't think Jordan Peele would do a great job with the Alien. I think Ari Aster, he has a much more, like, thinking about Hereditary, like, he has a much more atmospheric approach and Midsommar to filmmaking than Jordan Peele does.
Okay.
And Alien, you need to have the atmosphere. How about you?
I think Ari Aster would be, the aesthetic would be potentially more interesting. I think with Jordan Peele, you would get an interesting social commentary. I don't know between the two which one would serve the Alien movie best. I don't know.
Alternatively, and this is where we can leave it if you'd like. Mm-hmm. Alternatively, instead of Paul W.S. Anderson directing a film, we can have Wes Anderson direct a film. The next Alien, directed by Wes Anderson.
Yes.
With Owen Wilson and Bill Murray as the alien.
Wow.
Yeah, they're both aliens. That's what happens when the alien pops out of the duck, and it's like, wow. Pops back in.
And the alien is played.
Jason Schwartzman.
Yes.
The whole crew will show up.
Oh, man.
Everything's in pastels.
I think we need to book a trip to Hollywood and go ahead and pitch that.
To talk to Wes Anderson, yeah. Yep. I think we're... Okay, nobody steal that.
Yes.
Well, thank you all for joining us for A Dark Impression. If Wes Anderson's out there listening, feel free to get in touch. Otherwise,
we got ideas.
Yeah. We'll make it happen. You can count on us, Wes.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to A Dark Impression. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rating and reviews make the world a scarier place. Consider leaving one wherever you get your podcasts. A Dark Impression was produced and edited by Vince and Dave. All movies are copyright their respective sources. Music is from Adobe Stock, all rights reserved.